I just, this will be a little different talk, perhaps, than many of the ones. So I have a little different perspective. And my talk is Using the Unknown in Science, Evolution, Design, and God of the Gaps. And the reason for this is because it's a concern or a objection to intelligent design that always comes up. I favor the idea that life is design. And the God of the Gaps thing is just sort of a catch-all that often is used to sort of discredit design. And I just think it's kind of an irrelevant objection in actual fact. There's always a concern one can raise, but I just want to talk a little bit about that. So I want to define the terms that are in color there: unknown, evolution, design, God of the Gaps. So if we can just define those to start off, what are we talking about? I will start with evolution. Of course, evolution can be defined in many different ways. So I've listed three here. I think everyone, probably including young earth creationists, and everyone would agree on the first definition. There's some sort of change. There might be qualifications, limits, etc. But nonetheless, there are changes in populations of organisms over time, to one degree or another. And I think historically, many people would agree, most people, that the history of life has changed over time. So the compositional profiles, we just heard about the Cambrian explosion. The organisms there are quite different than what we have now. So I think most people would agree on that. Third definition would be a series of continuous common ancestors. And a lot of people would agree with that to at least one degree or another, again, perhaps qualifications. I don't accept universal common ancestor. I think it's probably wrong, but there are even ID people that accept that. The main definition, though, that we're concerned about is the fourth one. And so if you notice on these definitions of each one, the one above it is entailed in the one below it. So this definition number four includes all the prior definitions, but adds this, and this is essentially evolutionary theory. So it typically refers to a comprehensive natural or naturalistic theory, biological origins. So we can explain everything in terms of natural process, as was mentioned, laws, perhaps maybe we can use some better metaphors or other things like seeds. So in any case, that's the concern that a lot of ID people have in various permutations of people who would affirm design and creation. Okay, so what do we mean by design? Well, I'm going to suggest, again, the main banner of this is intelligent design. And so it refers to the idea that the natural world displays evidence of actual design. In other words, the creation speaks to something beyond, particularly in what we're talking about, biology, beyond the properties of oxygen, as wonderful as they are. And that's necessary, but not necessarily sufficient. Okay, so the idea is that the creation actually sort of gives us hints, and there are fingerprints, what I like to call fingerprints, or vestiges of design. Vestige is from the Latin word for footprint. And so there are these things left behind in the creation that seem to point to a designer or are evidence of the earth and life being designed. So here's just kind of a dictionary definition. Think, invent, plan. I've highlighted keywords: order, arrange, creating, specification, agent, goal, set of requirements and constraints. So purpose, project, strategy, idea. So design is the idea that there is, it entails that there is a purpose, a direction, configurations of matter, for example, that might occur that wouldn't occur otherwise. So I did an entry on the Science and Religion Primer for Intelligent Design, and one of the phrases I have in my description is, an accurate view of nature is best achieved by occluding a concept of agent causality or intelligent agency. So what intelligent design says, there's more than one causal possibility here, and one of them might have to do with intelligent agency. And how would we know? What would that look like? Well, we don't have time to get into all the details, but just to contrast, I'll point out that so we have kind of two possible explanations for life. One is the idea of physical causality. We can appeal to chemical and physical behaviors, laws. That's very common in science. Properties of matter, energy, space, time, natural selection. You might add some others in there. And so this is the traditional evolutionary explanation. We can explain life in these terms. And it's pretty much an exclusive explanation. We're not going to appeal to something like intelligent agency. But a design explanation actually does appeal to intelligent agency. And we can add in things like information, know-how, concept, will, the ability to affect change, to cause particular outcomes, particularly with regard to specific configurations of matter that might not occur otherwise. So it's important to point out in design explanations that we're not negating physical causality. That still exists. Of course, that can cause things to happen. But we're simply adding this idea here that agents also cause arrangements of matter. And what can we say about those arrangements? And can we look at natural so-called arrangements? And do they have properties that seem more consistent with physical causality or intelligent agent causality? So we're just including both of these things. Okay, unknown. What do we mean by unknown? I think it's important to point out the unknown exists for all. We all have gaps in our knowledge, and we all use knowledge, and we all are subject to ignorance, and we put everything we know together, and there are things we don't know, and we still come at certain conclusions. So our ignorance, the unknown doesn't prevent us from making conclusions. We can still infer best explanations and so on. So this leads us to this common objection. And the idea is that the argument for design is primarily an inappropriate use of the unknown. And this is often called an argument from ignorance. So the idea is that intelligent design appeals to things where we don't know what's happening. And we sort of insert God there, and we'll get to that in just a minute. Okay, so here's the questions I'd like us all to think about. And that is, what is the appropriate use of the known and the unknown? Does a design inference rely inappropriately on our ignorance, or is there more to it than that? And I would, of course, suggest there is more to it than that. But let's just consider some examples of the argument from ignorance. So it's been around for a long time. So this is from 1981, Isaac Asimov. He writes, scientists are accustomed to a lack of knowledge. It is their aim to steadily reduce that lack. To suppose that because we don't know, we must assume a creator is to give up on the game, to settle for ignorance. To foolish people who don't know what keeps the sun shining, the answer is the sun god. To those who don't know what makes the rain fall, the answer is the rain god. Okay, so you can kind of see the idea here. Here's a Pavlovitz writing in Physics Today, form of what I call an argument for ignorance, whereas most scientists, or maybe that's another author, pardon me, wait for more evidence in the face of unanswered question. Ideas settle for the designer did it, and they want everybody else to do the same. Here's another one. I believe this one's actually a Physics Today article. I can't understand how the complex outcome could have arisen, so it must be a miracle. If we had previously attributed the unexplainable to design, we would still be using Thor's hammer to explain thunder. Okay. And here's from I Like Plants, and this is from the Botanical Society, so kind of embarrassed by this, but anyway. Following the rise and spread of science, many phenomena previously attributed to the supernatural, etc., became known to have natural causes and explanations. As natural causes were discovered and understood, religious authorities were forced to alter long-held positions in the face of growing scientific knowledge. The proponents of creationism / intelligent design promote scientific ignorance in the guise of learning. Okay, so then this is often connected to God of gaps and even things like Wikipedia, so, you know, can appeal to our great sources here, but it's just so common. Intelligent design has also been characterized as a God of gaps argument, which has the following form. There is a gap in scientific knowledge. The gap is filled with acts of God or an intelligent designer, and therefore proves the existence of God or intelligent designer. A God of the gaps argument is a theological version of an argument from ignorance. And even our colleague and friend, Dennis Venema, has said that one of the reasons he supposedly rejected ID was that it was a God of the gaps argument. And he's not alone. This is very common. This is from the BioLogos website. God of the gaps arguments use gaps in scientific explanations as indicators or even proof of God's action and therefore God's existence. Such arguments propose divine acts in place of natural scientific causes for phenomena that science cannot yet explain. The assumption is that if science cannot explain how something happened, then God must be the explanation. Sometimes it's actually hard for me to believe that people actually believe this about intelligent design. It's I don't know how to say this. It seems so, in a sense, naive, almost in its assumption of our naivete. It's rather startling to me, but nonetheless, there it is. Okay, so often, this is a quote that I see very often, or part of this quote. It's very good to include theological thinkers, and this is from Bonhoeffer, and this is often used to sort of bolster this idea of God of the gaps. And he notes that if the frontiers of knowledge are being pushed further and further back, and that's bound to be the case, then God is being pushed back with them and is therefore continually in retreat. We are to find God in what we know, not in what we don't know. God wants us to realize his presence, not in unsolved problems, but in those that are solved. That is true of the relationship between God and scientific knowledge, but also true of the wider human problems of death, suffering, and guilt. God is no stopgap. He must be recognized at the center of life, not when we're at the end of our resources. And of course, that last sentence, of course, who could disagree? And really much of the previous part as well. So the question is that what intelligent design is really doing? And I would suggest it's not, and I'll give a few reasons for that. Okay. One of the things I think that's interesting is what seems to be the operating model of knowledge and obtaining knowledge. And I just wonder if it's the best way to look at it. And what seems to be the case is this assumption of our accumulating knowledge is something like this. We can have knowledge at time A, knowledge at time B, knowledge at time C, and it's like a line. And this line, we can imagine, is reality and is we're filling things in. At time B, we filled in a little bit more that knowledge. And then at time C, we filled in a little bit more. And what happens is there's a gap in that knowledge, and we call that a gap of ignorance. And it seems to be that the accusation is that ID claims that such gaps are evidence for God's actions or God's existence. Okay. And the gap may start to fill in. And then what do we do? Well, God is eliminated. Okay, so I think that model may not be the best way actually to look at it. And it also seems to assume that intelligent design is primarily an apologetic argument. As a scientist, I don't think that's exactly the case. I mean, certainly intelligent design and lots of things in creation can be used. I mean, we've heard of different things, connecting God to even evolution. So there can be apologetic value to design evidence, and there may be motivations, etc. But As a scientist, I look at it as more of a hypothesis or a core system of best explanation out of which other hypotheses may be tested. And so for me, and I think most ID scientists and philosophers and theologians and so on, it's really an attempt to understand the natural world from the data it gives us, just like any other science program. Okay. Another thing is that it assumes that all things about life can be explained in terms of natural physical causality. So it assumes, in a sense, a priori knowledge that isn't in fact known. I would suggest that we actually don't know that. So it's based on a metaphysical assumption, a philosophical commitment, that all aspects of a living organism's biology are explainable by natural causes, which is itself based on ignorance. We don't actually know that. Design proponents suggest, as we've mentioned, at least one other aspect may be involved in originating life forms, and that is intelligent agency. Now, why would we do that? Well, first, I'm going to propose maybe a little different way to look at it. You can imagine a physical causal plane of explanation that would be true of evolution. We've got data points on that plane, and in the particular case of evolution, with it being a common ancestry universal, then you can imagine that the explanatory framework is an imagined line connected with these data points. And again, we have a gap knowledge or ignorance. But what ID suggests is there's another causal plane that might be possible, particularly in the origination of things. And I think that's important to distinguish. And so what we have is not data points in a plane, but data points more in three-dimensional space. And we're all trying to construct a picture of reality. And sometimes there are data points we thought were there, and then they get removed, and others get added in. And over time, perhaps we get a picture or an image of that natural reality. But there's also a problem in the other direction if you make that assumption. Why stop with biology? Why not continue to physical causality in every aspect of creation? This is a quote from Dan Brown, the author. And the interesting thing here on the end is, gods proved to be false idols. Science has now provided answers to almost every question man can ask. There are only a few questions left, and they are the esoteric ones. Where do we come from? What are we doing here? What's the meaning of life and universe? He was amazed. And these are questions CERN is trying to answer. Correction, these are the questions we are answering. And I think a lot of theists who are evolutionary proponents actually appeal to God of the gaps at a different level. They just push the answer back further. So why is it an objection for us? And it ignores the positive evidence for design. I'm going to suggest that more evidence is available than the mere absence of explanation. So it's not based on ignorance, but rather what is reasonably known, or inferred concerning natural causes and intelligent agent causes. So it's a different kind of thing. So I'm just going to suggest there are fingerprints for design. We don't have time to go into these. But I'll just note that we do believe that there are positive things, not simply the absence of explanations. Okay, and we can talk more about those some other time if you want to. Okay, so I think another problem is that it conflates operation with origin or functional explanations versus origin. And this is just another quote there. I'm going to point out, I think another way we can think about this is observable phenomena versus unobserved. And there's a sense in which there's a difference between a failure of explanation and a merely absent explanation. And there's a difference between those explanations that are attempted and repeatedly fail. So again, there's a difference between observable events that are repeatable, which most examples of God of the gaps reasoning appeal to observable events. But what evolution actually does, in a sense, is give us non-explanations for non-observable events. And so we have something that we don't observe, but we assume there must be an explanation or a pathway in between, and we make that explanation or attempt to. But I think it's a little different boat than what ID is actually doing. And I think this is actually a problem on the evolutionary side. Okay. And ignorance can be used to justify just about any failure of explanation. And again, this is another problem on the evolutionary side. One can always say, well, we just haven't solved it yet. And we will, and you'll see. So there's a way in which actually evolutionary theory appeals to ignorance, how it uses the unknown. Sometimes I think it's actually used as kind of a shield to hide non-explanations or failed explanations. Or maybe that's possible. Just to finish up, I don't have time, but I met a man who was trying to build a perpetual motion machine. And it was very interesting. This is his machine. And my dad was a pastor. You meet all kinds of interesting people. His dog got bit by a rattlesnake, jumped between him and the rattlesnake. He felt the dog saved his life and came to ask my dad for a prayer for the dog. Well, you can see the dog is fine, but the perpetual motion machine wasn't working that day. and I wasn't quite sure how it would work, but he had a wrench on the door of his house. He was a rather poor man and lived in this house out in the desert in New Mexico. And he said, this is the principle of my machine. And he pointed to this string. And as soon as I saw this, I knew it wouldn't work. And I think the reason is because he was confusing work with force. Work equals force times distance. But one of the interesting things he said was, I asked him if he'd consulted some physicists at a university near, you know, in Las Cruces, 60 miles away. And he said, yeah, I have. They all say it won't work, but maybe there's something they don't know. And I think, again, one can always appeal to ignorance. But maybe sometimes things actually just don't work that way. Okay, so here's my conclusion. I think my advice would be avoid God of the Gaps as an easy out, a non-rigorous refutation to avoid the evidence for design in the natural world. And instead, discuss the science, philosophy, and theological merits, which are legitimate topics, and the implications of that evidence. And I'd really appreciate that. Thank you.
Questions for Paul?
So you have that two-dimensional picture and you have the dots going there, and then you add a third dimension and you're putting dots in all three dimensions. The way we look at the world is through the way we can probe the world in science is physical, so we can only probe in that two-dimensional plane, I think. How would you imagine putting points in that three-dimensional system you noted?
So the actual material that we can work with certainly is just physical material.
Okay.
So the question is, though, do all objects, do all configurations, and we can do this as scientists, we can configure matter ourselves.
Yeah.
So as scientists and as intelligent agents, can matter be configured in ways that it doesn't normally be configure itself in? And I think the answer is yes, and we do that all the time. And agents do that. This computer is an example. My glasses are an example. These are all physical objects which we can work with in a lab or we can create. But all these objects are the result of intelligent agent actions and not simply the results of natural law. So the physical system is necessary but not sufficient for certain configurations. So what intelligent design suggests is that certain configurations in biological systems, similarly, we don't have evidence. Like I said, there's unobservables, for example, at the origin of life.
Okay, so your two-dimensional plane was not just physical planes, but a design physical. Design without, or it was just physical without design. And then your other axis was more design. And then
it's intelligent agency.
Okay.
So there are intelligent agent causal actions, and there are physical causal actions, and both exist.
John, I want to get a clarification. What I heard from your talk was a desire to provide, to use design as a way to provide some evidence. I had a lack of language here. Evidence for God.
No, actually, that's...
Evidence for a designer.
What we're saying is that the data itself suggests design. Now, that infers a designer, and I think there's apologetic possibilities in that that people do use, and sometimes I think they overdo it. But nonetheless, as a scientist, we're simply looking at the data, the configurations of matter, what matter does, what agents do, and drawing a conclusion.
So outside of the critiques, I saw all your critiques and I read them as well.
Yeah.
What is a distinctive, as a Christian, talking to another Christian, let's say a student who's trying to make sense of, I don't know if I'm theistic evolution or evolutionary creationism or intelligent design guy, I don't know. What is a distinctive for a Christian who does believe in a designer? Between where you stand and maybe where that kid is wrestling?
Where I stand and where the kid is.
Like maybe somebody that says, I think I'm theistic evolution, not intelligent design, but I'm not sure I know the difference.
Okay, well, I would say the difference is that we say that design is to some degree at least recognizable, that there are fingerprints of those of intelligent agent actions within the creation. And I made a list of the kinds of things that I think we could point to. That's probably not exhaustive, but and we could all debate or go into those kinds of things, whether those are legitimate or not. But in other words, I think intelligent design is just more overt in its recognition of design than most evolutionary creationists.
Thanks for your talk. Just a methodological question.
Sure.
When you see data, how do you tell at one point, how do you come to the point where you say, this is evidence of design versus we are going to look for another physical explanation? How do you arrive at that point? That's sort of a methodological.
Yeah. So operationally, a lot of science deals with what I think of as operational science. So I think it is a mistake, like most of the examples that, were given, lightning, thunder, Newton's orbits of the planets and correcting those orbits, does God step in to correct them? I think when we have observable things that are repeatable, there has to be an explanation. If we can see lightning and hear the thunder immediately afterwards, I think it's a bad idea to invoke God or some designer or something for that. But particularly in the case of originating things like this computer or, the vacuum robots that go around your house or whatever, they can run autonomously. They do their own thing. I've seen some pretty amazing robot videos recently where the robot will hop over a log and robots climb up stairs and all kinds of things. And they do that on their own. I mean, there's a person maybe guiding in the directions, but they do that on their own. So I think what you look for is those fingerprints. And like I mentioned up there, information. So I think genetic codes, the information in DNA, but it's not just DNA. There's information at many different levels, lots of different levels of coding. I think those suggest design. So I think it's difficult. I mean, people have done lots of studies with proteins or computer simulations to test design hypotheses, and more are being done all the time, for example. But yeah, it's often because both can exist, then you look at what's a reasonable explanation for physical causality. Is this more reasonably explained by the properties of matter, energy, space, time, natural selection, whatever? Or is it not really reasonably explained by that? And is it more correlated with the actions that we would normally associate with intelligent agency? So, yeah.
As Christians, we're all in agreement that, mm-hmm. you know, the universe shows the work of a creator in a sense that there are logical and coherent laws of sure. physics and chemistry. Sure. And as scientists, we're looking for coherence in boiling down diverse, complicated phenomena in terms of a few basic degrees of freedom. But it looks like when you open up intelligent design, that's opening up a mechanism which has an infinite number of degrees of freedom. The designer does whatever the designer does. And I'm not sure that's an economical way of explaining things.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so what the designer does, whatever he does, I don't think we have to get inside the head of the designer in a sense. I just think we're looking at systems. You can think about the Cambrian explosion that was talked about and photosynthesis. Just systems that come into existence as functional wholes that are put in place through programming, through machinery sets, combined with information sets that cause the development to happen and all the syntheses to happen. We're not trying to get in the head of the designer and what could have he done or what. We're just looking at the system, and it has all these properties of a design system. And as a scientist, that's about all I can say. I can't get into the head of the designer and predict what he might do or might not do. I just look at what's here, and it looks designed. I do think it helps develop predictions, though, for how I think, for example, how evolution might actually work. And I think it's a little bit different than the conventional paradigm and things like that. So, and that kind of thing is happening a lot throughout the Intelligent Design Committee community. There's a paper coming out. There's some really interesting stuff with computer modeling, for example. There's a really interesting paper I'm aware of that's going to be coming out concerning modularity versus common ancestry. And doing that according to what computer programmers do all the time using compilers, for example. So there's some really interesting things, I think, happening. And it does, the core idea of design is what we see as the evidence for design. And then out of that, I think, like any scientific theory, you can develop particular hypotheses that can be tested.
Okay, this concludes our morning session. Let's thank all three of our speakers once again.